Conduct Technologies is a data aggregation and analytics and a recommendation engine specific to the health, the wellness, but predominantly the human performance markets, with a super keen interest at improving outcomes. What does this mean? Or what is the size of the opportunity? Or what's powering this market forward? Well, it's really four demands. One, the desire to trade bigger, stronger, and faster athletes. Two, during that process, to mitigate the increasing costs of soft tissue injuries. Three, for organizations to identify talent at the earliest age possible. And four, which is a new trend, which is how do organizations potentially monetize the information that is generated off the players' bodies? Those four demands have really led to the creation of a brand new industry around player health, player welfare, and player tracking.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PBS CCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. What you just heard was a brief message from Kinduck Technologies, who is sponsoring this episode of the podcast. We are planning to include more sponsors as the year rolls on. Before we get started, I just wanted to say Happy New Year to all our listeners, both new and old. Your support for the show is greatly appreciated. With that, let's get into the episode. All right, everybody, I'm here with Kirby Retzer of the Boston Red Sox organization. Kirby, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, how you guys doing? My name's Kirby Retzer. I'm from the east coast of Florida over by Deerfield Beach. Graduated back in 2010. Got some money to go play for Florida Gulf Coast University, so I played 3 years of baseball over there. In my time over there, I had elbow surgery my first year, which kind of got me interested in the whole rehab process and kind of understanding where my body was and where it needed to get to in order to kind of play again. So that was 2011, played 2012. And then before the 2013 season, I was studying exercise science, and I found out about a Red Sox internship locally in the area in Fort Myers, where they have their spring training affiliate. So I talked with the coordinator at the time. His name was Mike Roos, about the opportunity during my senior season. And I ended up stopping playing baseball in order to do that internship. So I buried my head in the books, started really learning about what exercise science was, what strength and conditioning was. And I started the internship there in July of 2013. I worked almost a whole year until I graduated in May of 14. And then after I finished that internship there with them, I was hired on by the Minnesota Twins as a full-time employee for their Gulf Coast League team. Did that for a year and a half and loved it. That whole internship and year and a half in Fort Myers, I learned a great deal on and off the field. So after that year and a half with Minnesota, I moved to Boston. I worked for Mike Boyle for 6 months, and then after that little stint, I transitioned to the AAA with the Red Sox. So I was up in Pawtucket this last season. I'll be back up there again, and then we'll see where things go from there. In my off seasons, I work, I don't know if Chris has mentioned it before in the bio, but I do independent work in Naples, Florida. 12,000 square foot facility with a couple batting cages, 40-yard turf area, and a little weight room. So we'll work with a bunch of different age populations, from like young middle school kids all the way to a couple professional athletes that came out of at FGCU. So it's fun to get your hands on a bunch of different athletes from a bunch of different demographics and walks of life.
Yeah, man, you've been all over. GCL, yeah. AAA, private. So kind of feeding off of that, let's talk a little bit more about the private setting that you work at down in Florida. You said you got some pro guys there, some young kids. Give us kind of a rundown of what you do, maybe on a daily basis with those guys, and then kind of differentiate between how you train the pro guys and how you train the young guys, right? Because everybody thinks, you know, the kids are going to go pro, they need to train like the pros, but at least in my opinion, and I'm sure you're probably on the same boat, you know, training age kind of dictates what you do. So the professional guys don't necessarily do the same thing as the young kids, and the young kids don't do what the pros do. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think you're probably on the same boat here. So let's go into that a little bit. Tell us about the private facility a little more.
Yeah, man. So starting young. So from an athletic standpoint, like that is the goal, is to create athleticism. And the youngest guy I think we had in there was 10 years old. And his father, hey, same thing. He said, hey, I want this kid to play professional baseball. And I just wanted to try to take him a step back and just let him know that, hey, until you can skip, run, throw, jump, like know where your body is in space, you're not going to be in the best position possible to be able to move on the field. And it doesn't matter what field it is. And you have to have an understanding of the demands of the sport. But at a young age like that, it's more about the pure athleticism abilities that can transfer in anything, whether it's you skipping a rock across a pond, shooting a deer and pulling them out of the woods, whatever it is. If you have athleticism and a little bit of muscular strength, you're going to be better off than if you have a specific skill development. So our programs really, really focus upon general strength and general preparation. So from a motor control standpoint, we're going to teach guys where they are in space. We're going to teach them how to load into a squat pattern, how to load into a little bit of a hinge pattern, how to pull themselves up in some form of a row, and how to push something away from himself. So whether it be a push up or what have you. So like from a resistance training standpoint, even if it's just body weight, getting them aware of where they are in space and what a hinge, squat, row, and press are, because those are movements that they're going to use for the rest of their life as they transition into middle school, high school, college, and beyond. So just getting them some basic recruitment abilities is our first main goal with some of the younger demographic. Having fun with them too, to be honest with you, is at that age. Okay, yeah, while you want to have them teach them how to squat, to hinge, to row, and to press, so they can have that requisite ability. Like having them have fun and understand that like half of strength and conditioning is learning mental wherewithal, learning work ethic. Learning that anything in his life is not just going to be a quick fix. So the mental and physical component at that age group is 50-50, if not more, on the mental side for me. So as we transition into more of the high school age, that same foundation transitions and just expands out just a little bit. So they'll learn a little bit more of the recruitment tasks based upon the demands of their sport. So say it's a baseball athlete, they're going to learn what their shoulder joint is. They're going to learn what their scapula is and why it is important to have requisite strength in those areas so their body can tolerate the forces that are placed upon them in the field of play. So based upon the demands of the sport, like I said, we'll start to transition into more specific things, whether it be hip drills, shoulder drills, and beyond. So that's more the high school realm is a little bit of more specificity, but still a big general preparation phase. As we transition into college and professional guys that are coming back, that's where it's going to be much more individualized programming based upon their individual limitations, based upon, like from our assessments that we do with them, whether it be them need a little bit more elastic storing energy, a little bit more explosive strength, whether it be they just have a poor movement baseline. So it will expand upon as time goes, a little bit more individual, but like I said, those same foundations of quality movement control and work ethic are the foundations of our program for the FADC.
It's awesome, man. I worked worked private facility last off season and I had two distinct groups, you know, the young kids and the high school kids. And the high school kids was like, I'm a strength coach. These kids are getting strong. These kids are getting explosive. And then the young kids, it was like, all right, we're going to practice the hinge today. And it's like, what's the hinge? And it's like, we just did it Tuesday and it's Thursday, yeah, you know? Yeah. So they forget stuff. And then, like you said, the fun thing is huge. You know, we had a little leaderboard, and at the end of every day, we had a competition. And if they got through their workout and it was, you know, good form and good focus, we'd have a little competition at the end. And the winner got a Chipotle gift card. So It was big time, awesome, man. The kids were like, oh, Chris, what are we doing today? What do we got? So
They'll remember the hinge if there's a Chipotle gift
card. Oh, man, if you give them a $20 Chipotle gift card, they'll remember everything. Yours. So let's talk about the kids a little bit more. I feel like that's an area that, you know, we had mentioned is kind of still new in this field. And parents kind of, like I said, they want their kids to be pros. But it seems like we're on the same page. You want to be a pro in just athleticism. I like the deer reference. That was pretty good. I never thought of athleticism as hunting down a deer, but it's very, very primal and very true. So what kind of stuff do you go through with those guys? Do you have like progressions, regressions? Do you teach them with dowels? Do you use training bars? Fill me in on the kids side a little bit more, man, just because, like I said, it's kind of an untapped part of this industry. And I think, you know, setting those foundations early is huge for making them better athletes down the road. So let's talk about that a little more.
Absolutely. Yeah. So guy walks in the door. We don't do any movement assessments on that middle school age group. At that point, we're just assuming that they've signed their liability waiver. They have no health concerns that are going to limit them. So with the kids, it's predominantly a team session. So that changes our programming just a little bit, but groups are usually anywhere from 8 to 10 kids. So when we program, we have to take that into account. So how it'll usually be is one coach for a group of 8. If there's a group of 10, we'll do 2 coaches for each group of 5. Walk them in there, we get them loose. So the first thing is almost an activation, a neural priming sequence to where we'll have them resist body weight in a handful of different planes, whether it be a high plank, so they're getting the sagittal plane core control, whether it be a side plank, so frontal plane core control, maybe something rotational based, whether it be a Pavlov press, they're getting some transverse plane core control recruitment. So just starting to prime their nervous system to be able to accept and produce some force in different planes, lower extremity wise, bridging, getting them to drive through hip extension, and then some sort of fast recruitment rate of force development exercise, whether it be a med ball slam, toss, throw, what have you. Just get them moving once they've been able to get a quick sweat going with some of the neural recruitment stuff. Once we get their body in a good spot there, take them outside, start to pull some of that athleticism out of them. So one of the best things that I've come across in my days is football passing. So we use a tennis ball. You'll have a group on the side of my right, group on the side of my left. Have them start in a base athletic position. Have them just transition out, do a nice jog, throw the ball, nice easy arc. Have them catch it 1, 2 hands. So start with 2, transition to 1, as you mentioned, a progression, transition to dominant hand, non-dominant hand after a few weeks. And they really enjoy it. And it gives them, hey, if you drop 2 balls, we're done. We're going to go back inside and we're going to get to work. But it's a way for them to get a little sweat going, get their heart rate up, get some blood perfusion without them even knowing it. And they actually get to compete with their friends, because when Johnny dropped the ball and Billy made a nice catch, Billy wants to work a little harder. So it's that interplay that you get to have with them. That's fun. You get to let them know that, hey, from day one, from the get-go of this training session, we're going to try to have fun. We're going to compete. We're going to get better. And it sets a good tone. That's one of the most fun things of my day is that baseball little session right there, that football pass little session. So after that, after they get a little lather going, transition back into the weight room. That whole first sequence is about 15 minutes. Our whole session is about an hour long. So they come in after grabbing a quick drink of water, and we'll get them in the weight room. So like I mentioned, squat, hinge, press, row, we break that into 4 separate exercise selections. So squat, first off, body weight squat. One of the best ways we've taught it is, hey, you're squatting to a toilet. So we'll put an implement behind them that they have some sort of biofeedback. There's a lot of evidence on external cueing versus internal cueing, and giving them just a biofeedback marker to work towards. So they transition down to a box or a little toilet seat, transition back up to normal standing. While one group of 2 is doing that and I'm able to coach them, I put the other guys that are waiting in a superset format. So just some basic requisite movement that's very simple for them to learn. I hand them a stopwatch so they have some accountability. And then once they're done with that exercise, the time interval works out perfect to where they'll transition to the squat, where I can actually coach them, have eyes on them, and the other guys can keep working with another rudimentary core exercise, usually a plank. So transition there, get some time under tension, usually 3 or 4 sets of 10, kind of depending on what age group we have. And then we transition there down the road to a goblet squat for that squat progression. So from a hinge standpoint, yes, we use a dowel, but how I start with them first is just a simple reach. I'd get up right now and show it to you, but everybody knows how to hinge. But comes back, how we end up doing it is hands out in front of them, so the external cue that we'll use is, hey, back butt to the wall behind you, hands to the wall in front of you. And they just really elongate that entire system, and they can feel the tension build in their hamstrings and their glutes. And we've used 10 to 15 second isometric count for those. Same thing with the validity for some of the external cueing. Spatial awareness research shows that a lot of the isometrics gives them more of a spatial awareness proprioceptive feedback loop. So they're able to kind of figure out where they are in space a little better with an isometric rather than transitioning in and out of repetitions. So with the hinge, when they're first learning that pattern, that whole group will go at one time, hey, ready, go. And I'll have hands-on feedback on them. Hey, move here, feel this. Okay, hold there. And providing them some tactile feedback as well as the biofeedback loop that they're getting. And then we'll transition to four sets of that. Same thing, we'll have a superset with our hinge. Transition into upper body wise, I'm a huge fan of the pull-up. Sometimes on a mass scale, it's hard to implement that. So whether it be TRX row or pull-up, we'll separate a group out based upon, because we only have two racks, based upon exercise availability, whether or not there's a personal training client in our weight room at the time. So whatever we have available, we'll transition to either high row or low row. Start with an isometric so they have a feeling of what actual scapular retraction looks like. So they're not driving into just humeral extension and they're letting their scap anteriorly tip. So just educating them on proper retraction pattern and just really subtly adding body weight to those exercises. We'll use bands or spotters for the pull-up so they can have the same thing of a proper downward rotation and retraction of their scapula, good extension of their humerus throughout the entire range. So same thing. Have our row, have our very simple rudimentary core exercise or something fun if we have an extra coach there that can get some eyes on the guys. And then from a push-up standpoint for our other upper body exercise, almost all guys are started on an elevated to kind of manipulate some of that gravity. So we'll start them on about a 30-degree incline and then progress them down as the weeks progress. And they realize that, hey, like, it might be a step back for me to come on a bench and they see women, like some of the volleyball teams that we have in there, the high school volleyball teams in there that we have, they get a little bit, but they understand and respect that there is a time and a place to push yourself and there's a time and a place to where, hey, if your form's breaking down, you need to have a little bit of a regression here. So they're receptive to a lot of the feedback we have, and it's been a blast working with that group.
It's awesome, man. There's a lot of good stuff there. So yeah, I think biggest thing is just educating kids, right? And you touched on it a ton. And I guess, is it just you there or is it other strength coaches? I know you said you have other coaches who help, but is it, you know, are you the primary strength coach? Are there other strength coaches helping out? I think for kids, the more eyes is probably the better. I do like what you said, though, like isometrics, you can kind of manipulate them so that if you are the only guy there, it kind of slows the session down as opposed to having a bunch of 8-10-year-old kids running around all over the place. But is it just you? Are there other guys? You know, what's the scenario looking like there?
Yeah, so the owner of the facility is a guy by the name of Sterling Hitchcock. He was a former major league pitcher for the Yankees and the Padres for, I think he's got 10 years of service time.
Yeah.
So he opened this place back in 2014, and he gave me a ring and asked me to kind of design the weight room and help implement some of the programs starting out. So we got going back in April of 2014 when I was with Minnesota. And from there, it's really transitioned well. There's a strength coach that came in that summer. His name's Matt Jordan. When I'm away in Pawtucket, he's the one that's really overseeing the whole processes of the facility. So he would be the main head strength coach right there. So when I'm gone, he's full force. His fiance, her name's Kelsey. She's also certified. She worked under Mike Boydell I think he did. She did a 6-month internship back in 2014. So they're the two that are in there that are running the majority of the operation. A guy by the name of John D'Amico is our physical therapist that's in-house that runs the golf fitness side of things. And then Sterling actually does TPI certifications as well and does some of the golf as well as pitching lessons and what have you. So it's really those four and myself as almost a consultant for that business are the main sports medicine team that we have there.
The Mike Boyle tree is huge, man.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Yeah, kid. I didn't get to finish my remarks right there after the resistance training. So we got them in there, got them loose, had them run outside. We did the resistance training component, and then we'll do some form of speed, agility, quickness, or conditioning based upon how many days a week the groups have signed up. So alternating between linear and lateral days, or our conditioning days vary. So that's that tail end of our segment. And if we have time, if the parents are cool with it, then we usually do a tug of war session at the end, either 2-on-2 or 4-versus-4, and the guys eat it up. The guys really eat it up.
Competition, man, it's huge.
Yeah, it's you got to get them to compete.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
sorry for that.
No, man, you're good. The more information, the better, of course. All right, man, there's a lot of good information there. So kind of transitioning a little bit, you're a busy guy between Pawtucket and the private facility in the off season, and obviously I know we work the strength camps and do the conferences and everything. What kind of reading are you doing nowadays? I'm a big books guy. What do you got for me? Anything?
Yeah, I'm actually just cracking into a book by Tim Ferriss, Tools of Titan. It was Tools of Titans. It was a gift from my in-laws, if you will, when I was up in New York. So I'm excited about that one. I've heard good reviews about his work, about combining a lot of the different strategies that some of the professionals in the world use to stay productive and what have you. One that I just read not too long ago is The Five Love Languages. It was actually a really good book that helped me connect not only with the woman in my life, but also with some of the other people that you come in contact with, man. It doesn't matter how good of a program you write if you don't understand where somebody else is coming from, and if you can't communicate why something is important to them. And each person's going to be different, and each person's going to communicate differently. So having a respect for where each people are coming from and how to connect to each person is something that's really valuable, and I'm starting to learn more and more about in my days.
That book is awesome, man. The Five Love Languages is huge. The Tools of the Titans, I saw that at the airport the other day when I was flying home, but it looked a little too intimidating for me. So you'll have to let me know how it is. It's a huge, huge book, but definitely worthwhile. I'm sure Tim Ferriss has some great stuff. What about any advice, you know, for younger guys? I mean, obviously myself and you were still relatively young in the field, but anybody who's looking to get into either professional baseball or even, you know, the private setting like you're working at, just this field in general, what kind of advice do you have for young guys and gals who want to make strength and conditioning a full-time thing in their life?
Yeah, strength and conditioning is the goal. One of the things that was the most there's two things that were the most beneficial that I can think of. The first one was having a deep requisite understanding of anatomy and physiology. If you don't understand the system that you are working with and many of the different parts, whether it be origin insertion of musculature, whether it be the energy systems that you're programming for, whether it be how you're loading certain joints. So looking at some of the biomechanical principles that are out there, like really having a deep exercise science understanding, I think is one of the most important things. The second thing, which probably will trump that, and a lot of people would agree with me, is a really quality internship. So learning from somebody who has been there and done that based upon where you want to go in whatever field that be, whether it be athletics, working with geriatrics, whether it be whatever it might be, but finding what you really want to do, why you want to do it, and then moving forward and finding a mentor that will take you under his wing, his or her wing, and really carrying out a diligent internship, whether it be 6 months to a year, I think would be those two things would be the most important thing I would suggest for somebody that's a little younger.
It's great advice, man. Great advice. My internship really set me on the right path, so that hit home for me.
Not kidding. Big time. Yeah, you're not kidding.
So, not kidding. All right, if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get a hold of you, get some more information from you? I know you're not really like a Twitter, social media kind of guy, you know, email
it's
or...
It's funny you say that, because today I actually just started.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. Awesome. And the purpose being is there's a lot of value out there. And it is the way of the world these days to have content online of what you believe in. And in my opinion, the thing that I've really just realized is it's honestly a working resume. If somebody Googles your name in year 2060, I want them to know who I was, what the belief systems were, and who I've worked to try to help in my time. So It's Kirby_Retzer on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And then email would be K, A as in Andy, my last name, Retzer, R-E-T-Z-E-R, the number 2@gmail.com. And then I'm fine putting my cell phone out there. It's 561-699-2560. I think part of the, like, the majority of the world, like we said about the internships, is networking with people and really helping expand the knowledge bubble and expand our field. So that's the goal, and I'm willing to help anybody in any way I can.
For sure, man, for sure. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for spending the time with me. Had a great talk. A lot of good stuff coming out of this one. I'm going to run through it again, take a bunch of notes, and I'll see you in spring training. I'm sure we'll talk probably every day before then, but looking forward to getting back together and then getting the minds going again. So thanks again Sounds for good. Coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Enjoy your day.
Thanks, man. You too.
All right, everybody, that concludes our episode with Kirby. I hope you enjoyed it. Kirby is a really intelligent guy, and I'm fortunate to be able to call him a friend. Three things I took from Kirby in this episode are to have a deep understanding of the science, learn from those who have already done what you are trying to accomplish, and that if you cannot connect and communicate effectively with players, it may not matter how good your program is. Before we wrap this one up, I just wanted to say thank you one more time to Kinduct for sponsoring this episode. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.